Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Stockings and Spells by Nancy Warren, narrated by Sarah Zimmerman. Chapter 1. The December day dawned bright, or as bright as a day can dawn in Oxford, England, in December, which is to say, not very. Winters in our part of Oxfordshire were cloudy and cold, which was no doubt why so many vampires chose to live here. Between the network of tunnels that ran underneath the city and the number of cloudy days, they rarely had to worry about the sun. Winter was when my vampire knitting club was happiest. I was dressed nearly head to toe in garments hand-knitted by my undead friends. On my head was a stylish red cloche hat that kept my ears warm. Circling my neck was a red and blue scarf featuring a complicated geometric pattern, and on my hands were matching mittens. I'd bought my navy blue coat, but beneath it I wore a gorgeous knitted dress. Even my black stockings were done by hand, though I think that was mainly Sylvia showing off. My high-heeled boots tapped over the cobblestones in front of Cardinal College on Harrington Street. There weren't many students hanging around on the frozen, crisp grass. They were all inside, presumably at lectures or studying somewhere warm. I dodged a few ambling shoppers as I hurried to Cardinal Wolsey's, the knitting and yarn shop that I inherited when my grandmother died. Or sort of died. She was now an enthusiastic member of the Vampire Knitting Club. I'd left my new assistant in charge of the shop while I went across the street to Frog's Books, where I'd put in an order. After puzzling over Christmas gifts for vampires who owned everything they could possibly want, I'd settled on newly released books. I didn't like to leave my assistant alone in the shop for too long. Her name was Meritamun, and she was an Egyptian witch who'd been trapped in a cursed mirror for 3 millennia. As a result, she had missed a lot of developments in the world. She was convinced, for example, that everything operated by electricity actually had a spirit trapped within it. I'd caught her trying to release a spirit from the microwave just last week. I'd been popping corn, and she'd become so convinced that tiny explosions were the witch banging on the door to be let out that she'd magicked the door open. I was still finding stray kernels of popped corn, like little ghosts, hiding in the dish drainer, the cutlery drawer, and under the fridge. At least Nyx, my black cat, had enjoyed the experience. She decided that microwave popcorn was a cat toy in disguise. Mary was deeply suspicious of the cash register in Cardinal Wolsey's and the electric lights, but otherwise it was a pretty old-fashioned place. She couldn't knit, but then neither could I. We were both taking lessons from the vampires. I'd hired Mary as my assistant because she had nowhere else to go. However, now that we'd been working together for a few weeks, I'd grown extremely fond of her. She was always patient. I suppose being stuck in a mirror for 3,000 years would teach patience. She loved the color and texture of wool. I really thought she was happiest sitting quietly with her knitting. With the modern world being so loud and confusing, I could understand that. Unfortunately, December was a busy month at Cardinal Wolsey's, as knitters rushed in to pick up the supplies they'd need for their gift lists. I was surprised that knitting had so many procrastinators. I suspected there would be many a pair of knitting needles clacking together into the wee hours of Christmas morning. As I approached my little shop, warm satisfaction washed over me. The front window brimmed with a colorful display of sweater kits, appropriate as a gift for the knitter or as a project to be hastily completed by Christmas. There was an array of snuggly sweaters for those without the time or inclination to actually knit something. My favorite part of the display was the 4-hand-knitted Christmas stockings hanging in front of a painted fireplace, complete with licking orange flames. The artwork was courtesy of Theodore, one of the vampire knitters, who, apart from being a former policeman, had painted sets for amateur theater productions. And curled up in front of the fire, almost as though she could feel the warmth, was my black cat and familiar Nyx. I'd put twinkly lights all around the window and the painted fireplace, so my shop looked festive and inviting. When I walked in, the place was bustling. Mary was trapped in the corner with a young, intense man. As the door closed behind me, she sent me a glance of appeal, and I went straight over, ignoring 3 other customers, who all seemed to be browsing. Before I could ask how I could help, the guy turned to me. I'm looking for a knitted iPad cover, and she says she doesn't know what I'm talking about. An iPad cover? How complicated is that? Of course, I'd talked to Mary about computers in general, but we hadn't had time to go through every permutation from the smartphone to the tablet. I smiled soothingly. I'm afraid we don't have any knitted iPad covers, or any patterns to make them. It's a good idea, though. Now he looked even more annoyed. Why couldn't she just tell me that? She's from Egypt, I said, as though that explained everything. He shook his head. I think they have iPads in Egypt. Not in the Middle Kingdom. After that very dissatisfied customer had stalked out, I turned to Mary, who looked flustered and anxious. Don't worry, you're catching on really fast. She nodded gratefully and headed to the cash desk where a customer had a sweater kit and a knitting pattern book she wanted to buy. It would be a nice, smooth, easy purchase, exactly what Mary needed to get her confidence back. She might not be a knitting genius or conversant with every kind of computer on the planet, but Mary was surprisingly good with customers. She'd been a servant to a lesser wife of one of the pharaohs, so she was used to serving, and she did it well. When she'd finished with the customer, she came to me with the notebook she always carried. In it, she'd write questions for me or reminders of things she'd learned. She had a good memory and listened intently, so I knew she'd catch on eventually. She just had a lot of catching up to do. It wasn't always easy, as Mary lived in my guest room upstairs and we worked together. However, she was a much more experienced witch than I was, so while I could help her to navigate the modern world, she was trying to help me settle into being a witch. We were busy for the rest of the day, and afterwards we went upstairs to the flat above the shop. For our dinner, I'd bought kebabs and was making a spiced rice dish I'd found online. I tried to cook things that would be familiar to Mary, or at least not make her turn away in horror as she had the first time she saw black pudding. After dinner, she read the local newspaper as she liked to know what was going on, and she could ask me about anything that was confusing, which was quite a bit. Since the Vampire Knitting Club was meeting that night, I decided to stay in and practice my own knitting. Even though my former assistant, Eileen, had turned out to be a soul-sucking demon, she had helped me improve my knitting. She got me to begin with a simple square. I was on my third square now, and one of these days I was going to complete a square that didn't look as though it had been attacked by moths or hungry lions or turned into every geometric shape but square. I don't know how I dropped so many stitches and why I could never find them. I think even the endless patience of the vampires was beginning to run thin. The buzzer on the house phone went off about 8 o'clock that night, indicating there was someone at the door. It was my grandmother and her best friend and maker, Sylvia. They both came in wearing smart new outfits. Sylvia, who in life had been a stage and screen star in the 1920s, always looked glamorous. But my grandmother always looked like a quintessential grandmother, and she still did. She wore her white hair coiled neatly in a bun. Her lined face was as kind as ever, but I was pretty sure that if I looked inside her coat, I would see a designer's name on the label. "How was your trip?" I asked, holding out my arms. I hugged first my grandmother and then Sylvia. "I didn't expect you back so soon." Gran hadn't had much chance to travel in life. She'd been widowed young and had run Cardinal Wolsey's for more than 50 years. Now that she was undead, she had the time and some very rich friends who also liked to travel. She and Sylvia had been in Paris and Rome. They were full of news. "We had the most wonderful time. The shopping there is simply amazing, and vampires there don't have a friendly knitting shop like we do. We really think it's time for you to expand. Start a franchise." I shook my head. "I appreciate that you'd like to attend Vampire Knitting Club meetings whenever you travel, but I can barely manage one shop. I don't think I'm ready for more." They glanced at each other as though my response was exactly what they'd expected. Gran patted my hand. "Just think about it." I felt that there was more coming, but for now they let it be. I took their coats, and a quick peek confirmed that Gran was indeed shopping the designers these days. Then we all settled in the living room on the chintz chairs and the comfy couch. Sylvia turned to Mary, who'd already moved on from single-colored squares and was knitting a scarf. Her stitches were more fluid and even than mine. I tried not to be jealous, With all she'd been through, I should be happy she was enjoying knitting. How are you getting along, dear? Mary was not one to blow her own horn. She cast her eyes down to the floor and said, Lucy is very patient with me. I make so many mistakes. There is so much I do not understand. She's doing a wonderful job, I said, and as soon as she is more used to this millennium, she'll be an incredible assistant. It was not lost on me that the assistants I'd hired had turned out to be disasters, while the one I'd freed from a cursed mirror turned out to be the best choice. And how was Samhain? Gran wanted to know. I'd finally gone to one of the coven's events, which took place at a circle of ancient standing stones, not far from Morton under Witchwood. Fine, I said airily. Gran would find out soon enough what a disaster my first witch social gathering had been, but I didn't have the heart to tell her quite yet. Instead, I changed the subject back to what they'd seen on their travels, a much safer topic. I wished I was a powerful enough witch that I could erase the evening from the memories of all who'd been there that night. At 10 o'clock, the four of us went downstairs to join the vampire knitting club in the back room of my shop. About 15 vampires showed up, either coming up through the trap door from their underground apartment complex, which was accessed through the tunnel that ran under my shop, or walking in through the shop door. They were happy to see Sylvia and Gran, and after everyone was settled and the knitting needles were flying at warp speed, the crochet hooks traveling so fast they looked like tiny firework displays, I settled to my own knitting. These knitters, who had been practicing their craft for hundreds of years, would put any modern knitter to shame. Still, they very kindly encouraged me, and I kept trying. We always chatted and gossiped while we worked, but I could feel a strange, suppressed energy in the group. I had a feeling they had something on their collective minds, but I decided not to ask. Probably, whatever it was, I didn't want to know. We knitted on. Finally, Alfred said, "Lucy, there's something we want to discuss with you." Yep, here it came. I'd seen them glancing amongst themselves, and clearly Alfred had been nominated to bring up whatever subject they were keen to discuss. "What is it?" I asked. "We've been thinking. We'd like to have a booth at the Oxford Holiday Market this year." I was so surprised I dropped my knitting. I think a stitch or two came off the needle, but I couldn't worry about that now. I picked up my square. For some reason, it looked like a bent triangle, something like a taco chip in shape. I glanced around at all the eager faces looking at me. "You want to do what?" Alfred chuckled. "I thought you'd be surprised." He held up his hand like a magician about to pull a rabbit out of a hat. "Think about it. We have so many knitted garments piling up. We need to get rid of some of them. Also, look how popular our knitted Christmas stockings have been. We've got plenty of goods to stock one of those nice little chalets in the center of town." "But who's going to sell the stuff?" I asked. He looked at me as though I were stupid. "We will, of course." I don't know why I thought this was a terrible idea, but I thought it was a terrible idea. The vampires stayed out of sight, slipped quietly through this ancient city in the shadows. The Oxford Holiday Market brought shoppers from far and wide, and they'd be in the middle of town. I looked around. "Have you ever been to one of these markets? Do you know how crowded they get?" I didn't want to bring up the notion that all that hot, pulsing blood so close to them might be too much of a temptation. They lived off a private blood bank, but I had to assume that it tasted better fresh. Plus, didn't they have an instinct to kill? Alfred looked a little hurt, as though he'd read my mind. "We want to help."
"Help who?"
"We want to inspire people to take up handicrafts. In the time we've all roamed the earth, people have moved faster and faster, worked longer hours. Now, with modern technology, everyone is connected." He put air quotes around the word connected. He shook his head. "I worry about people today. They have so much stress and so little leisure time. Knitting is relaxing, and we'll give all the profits to charity." I knew that every generation pretty much thought the next one was doomed. I didn't realize it worked in vampire world as well. It was sweet that they cared about the stresses of modern human life and wanted to alleviate them. Frightening, but sweet. They They could have gone ahead and got a booth without me, but I suspected they needed my help. So I reminded them that I was busy running my own shop. Alfred waved that objection away. You won't have to do anything, Lucy. Just rent the booth in your name and be the contact person. Dr. Christopher Weaver, who ran the private blood bank, said, And perhaps you could help with publicity. For instance, you could hang up our poster in your shop window. They had a poster? You're serious about this. I looked around. Does Rafe know what you're planning? Rafe Crozier was their unofficial leader. I considered him a friend, but he could be very high-handed, and they would never take on an enterprise like this without his tacit permission. They all nodded in unison. Oh, yes, Alfred confirmed. Rafe is solidly on board. I looked at Sylvia and Gran, who had been away and presumably not part of the conversation. What do you think? Gran smiled her sweet smile. I think it would be lovely to be involved in a knitting shop again, even if it was only a temporary one. Though I suppose I wouldn't be allowed to sit in the booth and sell things. The very idea made my skin break out in a cold sweat. Gran had been well known in this town before she passed, and I had trouble as it was keeping her out of the shop in the middle of the day when she tended to sleepwalk. We couldn't have her selling scarves at the Christmas market. People from her former life would be bound to notice. Sylvia glanced quickly at me and then reached over and patted Gran on her shoulder. We'll need you to manage all the inventory, and I know it's a lot to ask, but perhaps you could also do the accounting. Gran, who'd looked downcast when she realized she wouldn't be on the selling floor, brightened up at the idea of being so useful. She nodded. Yes, that's an excellent idea, Sylvia. I'd be happy to manage the back end of the enterprise. I couldn't think of any more objections. The ones I had were vague and unformed. I wished Rafe were here and wondered why he wasn't. Even Mary looked excited at the idea. I have heard much about this holiday called Christmas. I look forward to seeing it with my own eyes. I nodded. I'll see about getting a booth, though we could be too late. In fact, the more I thought about it, I imagined you had to book booths months in advance. Once more, they all glanced at each other and looked sheepish. Alfred said, Actually, you already did. I felt my forehead wrinkle in puzzlement. I did what? You may have already made the application and filled out the forms. I believe you've already sent the committee a deposit. I couldn't be bothered to get annoyed. What was the point? Clearly, they were using me as the front for this enterprise, and clearly I was going to let them. I rolled my eyes. All right, tell me what I have to do. You have to go tomorrow to the stallholders' meeting. Were you planning to tell me? If I hadn't been needed to show my face at this meeting, I wondered if they would have just gone ahead and had this knitting booth in my name without informing me. They all spoke at once, assuring me that they would never do anything I didn't like, but I wasn't too sure. Rafe came in then. He sauntered in the front door, in spite of the fact that I had locked it. When he walked into the back room, his eyes immediately sought out mine. His wintry gaze lightened. "Good evening, Lucy." I nodded. Hi, Rafe. The other vampires all greeted him, and then Alfred said, We were just filling Lucy in on the details of our chalet at the holiday market. He nodded. You finally told her. We always intended to. The moment was just never right. Rafe settled into an empty chair beside Clara, a sweet older vampire who'd been turned in the 1930s. Have you decided on a name yet? He pulled out his knitting, what looked like a sweater made of black cashmere. It looked so soft I wanted to stroke my fingers over it. Instead, I went back to attacking my blue chunky wool. We're having trouble deciding on a name. I thought perhaps Yule Knits. Clara here came up with Yuletide Treasures. Mabel suggested Christmas for You. What do you think, Lucy? As long as they weren't calling themselves the Vampire Knitters, any name was fine with me. Silence Buggins, who was never one to be silent for long, said, I think Victorian Handcrafts would be a very nice name. No other age has been as good as mine, she simpered. Or we could call it Silent Knits. Sylvia rolled her eyes. Sounds like quiet lice. I could see a fight beginning to brew. All I needed was for them all to lay claim to why their particular era was the best. I said, before anyone else could speak, You're all timeless. Why not timeless treasures? Sure, it was probably a cliché, and there must be a million shops with a name like that. But this ragtag bunch of undead knitters were indeed timeless, and they were certainly treasures. I like it, Alfred said. Clara nodded. It has a nice ring to it. Silence pouted for a moment, then sighed as much as her corset would allow her. Fine. All right, then, I said. I'll go to the orientation tomorrow. Is there anything else I should think about? Rafe said, You might see if you can secure a chalet that's out of the path of any direct sunlight. Right. I'll do my best. Chapter 2 I could tell that the group was excited to have a communal project. They'd always been fast knitters, but they began to turn out items with astonishing speed. I encouraged them all to make the long knitted stockings because I had a feeling they were going to be a popular item. Some of the stockings were just multicolor stripes, some decorated with buttons, others featured Santa and the reindeer, snowmen with black button eyes and red pom-poms for noses, trees and stars, nativity scenes. I had to put in huge orders for wool just to keep up with them. Sylvia and Theodore decorated the booth and decided where and how most of the products should be displayed. Naturally, I came along to help, and I think we were all pleased with the results. Theodore hand-painted the sign that said, Timeless Treasures, and Gran and I set the prices. We wanted them low enough to be affordable, but not so low that anyone would be suspicious of the motives of the sellers. I stayed up extra late the night before the holiday market opened, so I could walk over with Gran and look at our booth in the middle of the night. I opened up the stall and turned on all the lights, and when we stood back, it looked like a snow globe lit up in the night. She clapped her hands. Ooh, that is so pretty! From the first day of the Christmas market, my prediction turned out to be true. The sweaters, the scarves, the mittens, and the hats were all popular, but the oversized knitted stockings were by far the most purchased items. Since Gran couldn't be seen in the city that she'd lived and died in, and I didn't want her to feel left out, I encouraged Silence to be Gran's deputy in keeping up production and organizing the stock. In fact, with most of the local vampires involved in the project, and no need for more than two of them in the booth at any one time, there were always going to be plenty of vampires left behind. The flat upstairs became an impromptu knitting factory, beginning in the evening when they got up and going through the night. The market opened on the first Friday in December. I couldn't wait to close my shop and walk over to Broad Street. Mary came along, keen for yet another new experience. It was wonderful to see the historic street lit up and bustling with shoppers. When we got to Timeless Treasures, Rafe was standing outside the booth as though we were shopping. Since he was well known as an antiquarian book expert, and he taught occasional lectures at one of the colleges, he decided that it would look too odd if he were seen to be selling knitted goods at the market. There were several other customers, and they weren't pretending. Two older women were picking among the extra long Christmas stockings. From how much inventory was already gone on the first day, I could already tell the knitting booth was going to be a success. Rafe and Alfred both greeted us, then Alfred leaned across the table and said, "Those long stockings have been selling very well, Lucy. The AB positive over there bought three of them," he said, pointing to a stout woman currently munching on a bag of roasted chestnuts. O negative, who's scowling over the wooden toys over there, dithered and said he'd think about it. Then, when he came back, the two he liked were gone. Alfred had a sensitive digestive system. He was allergic to garlic and fussy about blood type, but even so, I eyed him with suspicion. You're having me on. You can't smell someone's blood type in this crowd. Oh, can't I, Miss A positive? Okay, maybe he could. Well, make sure you stay well fed, I said in a low tone, from the blood bank. Rafe was chatting with Clara, but I saw him keep glancing across to the chalet facing ours, where a young woman sold handmade soaps, oils, and lotions. The sign over her booth read Bubbles. At first, I wasn't sure what he was looking at. Finally, I moved closer. Did I get the orientation of the booth wrong? Was he worried about the direction of the sun? He shook his head, glanced across again with a puzzled expression on his face. That woman looks familiar, but I can't place her. I looked at her more carefully. She was probably about 30, with long straight hair that was dyed to a copper-gold color. She was pretty, with big brown eyes and a somewhat sad expression. She didn't seem to have a helper and was kept busy with a steady stream of customers. She was definitely a stranger to me. Are you one of those people who never forgets a face? His eyes gleamed with humor. In 600 years, trust me, I've forgotten more than a few faces. I wondered if one day he'd forget mine and felt a jolt of sadness. Maybe she was a student of yours, or her family had a book valued by you. He shook his head. I remember all my students. I'm sure I've never actually met her. In fact, it could simply be that she reminds me of someone. Mary seemed fascinated by the market. I started to explain how it worked, but she stopped me with a laugh. This reminds me of the souks at home. Many people selling wares all collected in one place. Exactly. It must be nice for her to see something so familiar and low-tech. I was about to suggest that we take a tour when I looked ahead and my heart sank. Double, double toil and trouble, I muttered under my breath, watching the three witches walk toward me. If they hadn't already seen me, I'd have dived under the table to hide. Quoting Macbeth before dinner, Rafe asked. That could put you off your food. These three will do that all on their own. The three witches were my cousin Violet Weeks, her grandmother Lavinia, and a powerful witch named Margaret Twig. They came up to the booth, and Margaret said, in her flat Canadian accent, "The holiday market is booming, I see. How's business in the knitting booth?" She chuckled, looking from me to Rafe and back again. "My, that rhymes with kissing booth, doesn't it?" "What do you want, Margaret?" I asked. Miss Twig did not make social calls, certainly not on me. She glanced around and then lowered her voice as she leaned closer. "Just making sure you remember the winter solstice celebration. Yule is a very significant date on our calendar." I couldn't believe she was suggesting I turn up for another witching event. I glanced at Violet and Lavinia to see if I was being punked, but they both nodded as though they actually wanted me there. "Have you forgotten what happened at Samhain?" "Everyone has accidents, dear," my great-aunt Lavinia said soothingly. Rafe, of course, was listening to every word. "What happened at Samhain?" he asked. "All you said was it was boring." The three witches burst into mirth. "Boring?" Margaret Twig finally managed. "I've never been less bored." "I'm bored now," I said with an edge. "Let's talk about something else." But Rafe had sniffed out a good story, and he wasn't going to let it drop. "Please, I'm 600 years old. I'm so rarely surprised." Margaret was only too happy to oblige. "On Samhain, we invited Lucy, as the newest member of our coven, to give us a little demonstration of her magic." Her sparkling blue eyes were wet with tears of laughter. "She showed us, all right." The three witches went into another frenzy of cackling. "Honestly, put those three around a cauldron, and they'd brew up some seriously deadly potions using nothing but their evil cackles." Rafe merely waited, knowing she'd tell him when she had herself under control. "We were at the Standing Stones, you see. In fairness to Lucy, it's a very powerful area, on a very powerful night. She treated us to a little display." She turned to me. "What was it you were trying to do?" It was a spell I'd practiced and practiced. I still didn't understand how it had gone so wrong. "I was trying to lift the hat off your head and send it home, back to the closet or drawer where you keep it." I'd been quite pleased with that spell. While practicing it, I'd managed to tidy my house and shop by magic. It seemed time-efficient. Besides, I hated cleaning. "What went wrong?" Rafe asked. I could see a slight grin trying to break out on his face in anticipation of whatever was to come. My cousin Violet couldn't wait for Margaret. She blurted, "She uprooted one of the Standing Stones and sent it flying through the air." Rafe's eyebrows rose. "Was that the UFO that several people in Oxfordshire reported seeing?" "Yes, it was," Margaret said, glaring at Violet and taking back control of the story. I had to explain. "Margaret, you were standing in front of the stone. My magic somehow got confused. I still wasn't certain how it had happened, but I'd been watching Margaret's hat, not a pointy witch's one, but a purple felt fedora, telling it to go back to where it had come from, when the earth trembled and a massive stone that had been rooted in that spot for millennia shot off like a rocket and flew...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?